Tonight's discussion is about karma and reincarnation, and this is something that is a topic I really love. I find it absolutely fascinating. When you talk with other Buddhists, much less just about anybody else, it's a topic that seems to be surrounded by strong views, strong emotions, controversy, and a lot of confusion. And it seems to be a point of confusion, significant confusion, in many parts of the Buddhist community. So it's something that I like to explore and have been in the course this year-long course that I did entitled How Can I Help? We were comparing a lot of Hindu and pre-Hindu Brahmic teachings and then comparing those to Buddhist teachings, and this was part of it. And to someone living on this particular planet, this particular little planet, the issue of, is there something after this is probably the ultimate mystery. And like many of the teachings of the Buddha, I believe that it is difficult to understand many of the teachings that relate to this topic and many of the other teachings of the Buddha until you've been practicing for a long time. The practice is progressive, and much like other kinds of learning, we can't get to certain experiences and certain understandings until we have the experiences and understanding which are the precursors, the foundation to have those experiences. And so from a Buddhist perspective, from a practice perspective, that really depends on the extent and the quality and the intention of our study and our practice and the guidance we've received. I also think that this topic is alluring because there is seems to be a deep longing in the human mind that is expressed in nearly every religious and spiritual tradition other than this one for something to be happening after this lifetime, and particularly some kind of experience that is satisfying and happy. And it seems obvious that if something were going to happen after this life, and we knew that to be true, that it would affect our thoughts and our judgments and our behaviors in some way. So I think it's just like a rich, fascinating topic. Now, in the Buddhist community alone, this whole topic of religious versus spiritual versus secular Buddhism has got a lot of play in the last couple of years. I have to be honest with you, I'm not enthused about those as topics. I think a lot of it is it's all speculation. But just within the Buddhist community, I just thought, well, some of the different things I've heard and read. So, some people say that if you don't incorporate a reincarnation, that you're not a Buddhist. I mean, you're just not a Buddhist at all. In fact, you're not even following Buddhist practice if you don't believe it or it isn't incorporated into your practice. That's one view. Another one is that you need to buy the whole package of teachings. It's either all or nothing, and if you don't include reincarnation, it's kind of like you're undermining the whole foundation of the package in practice. Another viewpoint is that the teachings on reincarnation are 2,500 years old and just aren't relevant anymore to modern day society, and that you can just dissect them and take them out and be a secular Buddhist, and it's the same thing. Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't impair the quality of your practice or your understanding of the teachings at all. Some people say that Buddhist practice with the, you know, many, many, many teachings and practices are kind of like a smorgasbord, that you could you can just choose and pick whichever ones you want, and that that's the name of the game. And then it always blows my mind a little bit that you'll hear people say that the Buddha didn't teach reincarnation. So for the moment, I'm not editorializing after each of these, but after this one, I will editorialize and go, wrong, okay? Because Buddha absolutely taught reincarnation. And then you've got different positions on this, depending on the Buddhist tradition. You know, the Buddha himself was quite adamant that he was just a human being, that he had no otherworldly or otherworldly qualities, and that he was not teaching a religion. Well, those two things he was very clear. And the traditions that came immediately after him, one of the first things they did was attribute otherworldly qualities to him, that he was not just a man. You know. And of course, they taught it as a religion. And then the Tibetans, you know, just have a whole different ballgame going on a lot of things. Right? So, so even within the Buddhist traditions, based on culture, and based on philosophy, and based on emphasis, there are different positions on this. And this is one of the reasons that I like this group, because this group is Theravadan based and following the, as best we know, the closest thing to the true teachings of the historical Buddha that are in the Pali Canon. And so that's the perspective that I'm going to be speaking about. And in my opinion, all of the different views that I mentioned, other than the Buddha doesn't teach reincarnation, all of them are speculation. All of those things, in my opinion, are just speculation, and I don't know how people know those things. So it seemed to me appropriate in a discussion about reincarnation from a Buddhist perspective that we would actually look at what the historical Buddha said about reincarnation, kind of a refreshing idea that I don't see too often in this discussion. So historically, traditionally, what is reincarnation? And, you know, kind of historically, if you look at all the different traditions, it has something to do with a soul or some lasting element of an individual human being progressively developing through multiple lifetimes. And just as a fundamental principle, I'm not going to try to, this is a short talk tonight, and I'm not going to try to refine that too much further than that. But it has to do something with a permanency that is in each one of us, that in some way moves from one lifetime to another, and I guess people hope that that it's progressing. And in some theories, you know, that you could go the wrong way, you know, you could go backwards. And so in Hindu practice, they use the term reincarnation, but they refer to transmigration of the soul. You know, it's a trans across lifetimes, and the soul is actually migrating towards an ultimate end. So there is a poem from Rumi that I've heard Robert Bly use that I really, really like, that illustrates this. And it's called A Stone I Died. A stone I died and rose again, a plant. A plant I died and rose again, an animal. I died an animal and was born a man. Why should I fear death? What have I ever lost by dying? So I really like that because I think it incorporates one traditional and very powerful idea of what reincarnation is. The closest thing that I think in any tradition that gets even close to the Buddhist idea you find in Greek, Roman, and Egyptian mythology, and it's the story of the phoenix. And my guess is a lot of you are familiar with this, but generally it's about a bird, and you know, depending on which culture and which story, it varies a little bit, but basically it's about a bird which every 300 or 500 years flies back to the same altar where there is a fire. And voluntarily puts itself in the middle of that fire and burns itself, cremates itself. And then from its own ashes arises again as a new bird. Okay. Very powerful symbolism. I actually have several images of this up on my punch board above my computer. So that's close, particularly the burning idea, because the Buddha, when he talked about the cessation of desire, for example, he talked about, use a fire analogy, that our senses are on fire with desire, our senses are on fire with aversion, and that what we're trying to do is put that fire out, trying to cool that fire and then put it out through a whole series of processes. And particularly in talking about reincarnation, he used a fire analogy, which I'll use in just a moment. But the difference with this is that even in this, which is cross-cultural, you know, I was talking earlier about this longing for this idea of rebirth, it's clear that there's something of the first bird that is being reborn in the second. That's the whole purpose of the story. The bird is being reborn from its own ashes. It's not that it's not like when you go to Varanasi where they burn all the bodies and then they take all the ashes away. It's like, no, he flies into this fire, she flies into this fire, cremates themselves, and then while the fire is still going, arises from those ashes to be a new bird based on its own ashes. So there's this element of permanency or transition of some lasting element. So all of these have something to do traditionally with some element of us, of you and me, having some lasting element that is reincarnating. So the Buddhist teachings on reincarnation, there's nothing before the Buddhist teachings like them and nothing after. And the advice he gives regarding what to do with this topic is the same thing. It does not appear in any major religious or spiritual tradition. It is unique. Okay. So, looking at the notion of reincarnation or transformation, it's spread all through the Buddhist teachings, but I'm just going to highlight several things. The first is that, you know, the whole game in Buddhist practice is moving through stages of development in relationship to suffering in our life. And there's a whole plan and series of practices that the Buddha prescribed to deal with that. Traditionally, there are five stages. And the names themselves point towards this transformational or reincarnative process from his perspective. So the first one, actually the first one, there, traditionally there's four, but you could think of them as five. The first one is probably where most of us are, and that is preparing to get to the first stage. Because the first stage is actually that you've practiced and reached a certain level where you enter what is called stream entry. And when you enter stream entry, the characteristics are is that there's a series of things that are plaguing us that are uprooted when you enter that phase. That your practice has developed to a stage where certain things no longer are there, literally no longer there. And each one of the stages is characterized by this. So, and they are things like identity view disappears, is uprooted. Attachment to view is uprooted. And it's not that I'm no longer attached to view. It's that attachment to view is uprooted. It no longer exists in the mind. So in each one of the stages, there's characteristics. So the first one is called, quote, stream entry, which is entering this stream of mind or stream of life, which characterizes the Buddha's depiction of reincarnation. The second one is called one returner. One returner meaning you're going to die, and you're the first stage when you get to stream entry. The teaching is that you will only be reborn a maximum of seven more times, because when you the practice has taken a foothold and this initial uprooting in the mind has taken place, that if one practices diligently, this will happen. The second stage is one returner, once returner, which means there's only going to be one more lifetime after this one. The next stage is called non-returner. It's like, this is it. This is the last time. And then the final stage is called arahant, which is an awakened one, an enlightened one. So very clear from the language of those four stages. I mean, you know, I'm fascinated by this. I'm thinking, well, is there any way that you could kind of like, you know, there's a whole wing of Buddhism that talks about, you know, being born again in every moment and born again every day, you know, and not in some corny New Age way, but in the reality of it, that the Buddha talked about a single moment of mindfulness was important as, you know, years and years and years of being unmindful, because in that moment there's the possibility of awakening to the truth of things. So, you know, I've tried to think through, well, is there some way that that theory could apply to these descriptions? And I don't think there is. And there clearly aren't when you look at the description of the mind states of, you know, this progressive uprooting of everything, where at the end all of the negative mind states are uprooted and all of the positive mind states, kindness, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity, generosity, forgiveness, all of those start to pervade the mind, saturate the mind in the absence of all these negative qualities. And the part not to miss about this is that all of these are happening in this body and in a lifetime here. Now, none of these descriptions are about an afterlife. They're a description of being here, and that tanka that we have over on that wall, which depicts the wheel of life, the wheel of samsara. The Buddha said that, you know, that the whole game is to get off the wheel of samsara, and those four stages depict how you do that. When you hit that last stage, you come off that wheel. The Metta Sutta, once again, you know, all of us are familiar with metta, and this is how it ends. This talking about metta, which is this completely expansive, unconditional, kind quality of mind, this is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desire, is not born again into this world. So you just have to look, and it's every place, his references to this. So well, what actually happens next if there is reincarnation from the Buddhist teachings? And the Buddha's description of awakening, actually, of like what is it like? He didn't give us any clear descriptions about that. In the same way that he did not give us any clear descriptions about the same thing as nirvana, the release from suffering. Going through all four stages, there is a sutta called, I think, the 21 synonyms for awakening. And it's just adjectives, you know, unbounded, you know, 21 of those. But there is no description where he says, well, I'm going to tell you what it was like just before I became awakened, and then the day after, what happened. And what it's like to wake up on Tuesday morning, you know, when you're—I mean, there's no description like that. So the same thing is can be said with reincarnation. There is no description any place in the literature that explains in any detail at all how whatever it is, whatever element it is of us, that somehow goes into the stream of mind or stream of life and in some way reincarnates in another human body. There is one thing that is clear, though. It's absolutely clear. And that is that awakening and reincarnation from the standpoint of the Buddhist teachings as opposed to everything else is impersonal. That it is not about the person who's sitting here tonight who thinks that they are whoever they think they are. If you look at the four stages of awakening, what progressively happens is that at each stage, things become less personal. And the Buddha called this dispassion. And if you read the sutta about the night of his awakening, he talks about dispassion, and that's often, I think, really confuses people what that's supposed to mean. And so what he's talking about is that progressively these things that make us personalize events in a negative sense, where it causes us to identify with them or become attached to them and then struggle and suffer and be angry and grasp after things, in each one of these stages those are diminished so that the experience of life becomes less and less personal and as a result much bigger progressively. And I really got a kick out of Leonard Cohen's writings after he had spent 5 years in a Zen monastery. And one of the things he said is, when he came out, was one of the experiences he had there is he progressively felt less and less like himself. You know, the old person who was constantly striving for a whole series of things in relationships that never happened. And so he said, the less I felt like myself, the better I felt. You know, all the holding on, all the opposing, all of that started to fade away. So it's clear that the idea of awakening is impersonal, and the idea of reincarnation is impersonal. You know, from a Buddhist perspective, whoever it is who's sitting here tonight who thinks that they're Dennis or Jeff or Jerry or Mary or Kathy or whoever it is, if there is a reincarnation, isn't going to wake up next time and remember that this time that they attended this lecture on reincarnation. Okay, that's not. And if you remember the sutta where the Buddha described his awakening, okay. So I'm going to answer the question, and then this is. So if this is impersonal, and whoever it is here who thinks that they're somebody isn't going to know about it next time, would we ever know that we reincarnated from another life, whatever it is that does, which I'm going to address in just a second? And the answer is yes. It might take a while, but the answer is yes. And the keynote on this is the Buddha's description of his night of awakening. And there's several characteristics to awakening. This dramatic moment, you know, of things changing, of the mind being liberated. And one of them is that the Buddha saw back through this whole series of lives where whatever the element is, this element that was in him at the moment of that particular lifetime was in some way, and actually I think it's small ways, but in some small way, was in hundreds of lives. And he could see that. And the stories of each of his significant disciplines, and when they've given Dharma talks and talked about their awakening, same thing. So that is a feature. So in the event that we were to go through these stages of development and we were to reach the last stage, we would see that as well. Okay. So when the Buddha used the term reincarnation, what was he talking about? And actually, I'll just be really truthful with you. For me, I think this is very hard to grasp. It sounds the closest we can get for most of us at this stage of our practice is to have some intellectual idea about it. And even the intellectual idea is a little fuzzy. And I think it's hard for us to think of reincarnation in any other way other than the idea of I'm reincarnated, because, you know, growing up in our society and our studies of religion, that's the idea. I mean, that is the common idea. I find it helpful to think of this as more of a transformation of something as opposed to a transformation of an identity or a particular person. And the teaching image that the Buddha used, his primary image to illustrate this, was of a fire. And a candle, and rain. So I'm just going to stick with fire here. So let's say we brought in 8 pieces of wood, and the SDC would allow us to create a fire here on the carpet. And we started a fire, and there's this big, beautiful fire, you know. And then the fire starts to burn down, and somebody goes outside and gets 5 new pieces of wood and puts it on the fire, and the fire, you know, roars back up again, okay? So the first question is, well, is the fire with the addition of the 5 pieces of wood the same fire that was there with 8 pieces of wood? Or is it a different fire? I mean, there's a flame there. There's still a flame, but is it the same fire? And then that starts to, and you know, that goes on for 4 times. So now maybe there's not even any ashes left from the first 8. But there's a fire going. So is that the same fire? Or the same flame? What? Yeah. So the idea of this stream entry is that there is some element of us which is basically the things that have not been purified out of our minds. You know, all the unresolved material that is still struggling with the negative tendency of minds are the things that the Buddha said end up being reincarnated. But they're reincarnated into this huge stream, and then in some way come back into a human body. We have no idea how or at what percentages, or, you know, like if it's 6% of Jerry and 7% of Kathy and 0.2%, I think it's more like that. But, you know, so there's this huge stream and it gets reincarnated. And then the same thing with a candle. You light a candle, the candle burns down. Just before it burns out, you light another candle with the flame of that candle. Okay, so are these the same 2 candles, or are they the same flame? What is the relationship between the two? So that's what we get to work with, is that in some way there is this transfer. And like everything in Buddhism, the central element is process. So the flame is what's important from the Buddhist perspective. It isn't the wood. And it's the flame, not the candle. You know, there's this evolving process, okay, that is morphing, changing, adapting, and it's being influenced by a host of different circumstances. Okay, so everybody has like a pretty clear idea now, don't they? And it'll just keep getting clearer and clearer. So in the face of, so you can see from this that it was pretty clear that the Buddha was just not going to give any kind of detailed discussion of this, in the same way that he refused to give a detailed discussion of all kinds of other things that normally are big, huge philosophical topics. And the reason he did that is he felt that focusing on them in this lifetime actually was a distraction from practice. That was the reason that he didn't address it. So what do we do now about this particular topic, a topic that the Buddha was teaching and that the stages of awakening are actually named around it? What do we do with that as a practical matter? Okay. And he had some advice for us, and there were 2 pieces of advice. And one was what not to do, and the other one was what to do. Okay, so, and I'm going to kind of abbreviate this because we started late. I think this probably is going to turn into a part 2 talk. But the most important part of what not to do is either to deny something because we haven't had an experience with it, or to grasp after it on some basis that is not consistent with Buddhist grounds. And, you know, the most fundamental ground for practice is direct experience. You know, the Buddha said that actually in the sutta where he talks about this, about reincarnation, he says, do not use as a basis for evaluating this a belief that is not based on your own direct experience, something that is written in a scripture or a religious or a spiritual book that is spoken by a teacher or authority that you have great respect for, but you haven't had the experience of it, on speculation, on conjecture, on logical argument, on anything that's intellectual. So it's like, okay, what's left? But seriously, you know, it's like in anything practice-oriented, in anything this is important, if we're actually serious about practice and liberating the mind from suffering, those are all the things that make the mind suffer. And in something this big, we cannot afford to embrace this topic using any of those methods. Okay. So what to do? And the Buddha, I really like this. He said, these are things that we can do in the here and the now. It doesn't have anything about the future or another life or anything. So the first one was, and this is perhaps the most important one, I really like this. He said, just don't think about this too much, because if you do, it will tend to bend the mind. That it will actually kind of warp the mind, because it is so easy for the mind to start intellectually working on this, and then emotions follow, and it becomes completely dysfunctional. Not only does it completely take you away from practice, it results in emotional turmoil. So he said, you're not going to figure this out intellectually. It is not going to happen. And so there's a danger in trying to figure this out intellectually. Okay, that's number one. Number two, he said there were two assurances about this topic. Okay. So there were two assurances. The first assurance, he said, is if it's true that there is a world other than this one, and it's true that those worlds are governed by karma, or the that our intention results in certain actions that either move our mind towards liberation or away from it. If those two things are true, and you practice diligently, and by diligently he didn't mean that, you know, we think we're working hard, that the way he described practice, if we do that, those three things, the first two are true, and we do the third, that we will be reborn in a favorable life. That's the first assurance. Okay. The second assurance is, if it is not true that there is another world than this one, and or it is not true that karma is true, that our life is pointed towards a certain direction on a cause and effect basis by an intention, and we have practiced diligently, we will live the best life that you could possibly live, that we will be free of ill will, that we will be free of hatred, we will be free of desire. We will have an equanimous mind. We will experience compassion, kindness, and joy. So either way, he said, doesn't matter. You know, it's like, if it's true, and you really practice, you'll be reborn in favorable life. If it's not true, you'll live the best possible life you could live, because you'd live an ethical life, you'd have a clear mind, you'd have good relationships, you know, everything you can possibly think of. Okay. And then the third one is only make a decision about this based on your own direct experience and what the wise or the elders or those who are way ahead of us in practice would condone. That any other method on anything this important is unacceptable. So I think this is really challenging, and I just love it, because basically what the Buddha is saying is, look, forget about it. Just forget about it. You're not going to figure it out. And we know from practice that we have to get to a certain place before we can have certain kinds of direct experience. So it's going to take a while before we get to this one. So just forget about it. Stop thinking about it. And just practice as diligently as you can. And if it's true, you're going to be reborn in a favorable life. And if it isn't, you're going to have the best life you could possibly have. That's basically it. So that's challenging, because that requires of us that we give up what? That we give up being certain. That we have a clear answer to this, of something that seems so important. And just falling in to the moment after moment after moment, and practicing and being as present as we can, and making wise choices. And like, if you even take a look at this new manual by Mahasi Sayadaw, you can see it in the manual. I mean, it's granular. It's based on the historical teachings. It's like moment after moment after moment after moment being present. In the end, that's what practice is about, you know. So if we can do this, it relieves us of that long list of things that I had mentioned earlier. People having, you know, that this is outdated, so you don't have to believe it, or you can give it up and be a secular Buddhist, whatever that is. All of those things are irrelevant. It's just practice, because all the people who are arguing those things, my guess is, maybe I'm wrong, but the majority of them aren't awakened yet. So how could they possibly know? If you read the stages of awakening, you could be almost in the fourth one, and you wouldn't know. So it's just a question, like, how important are these teachings to us? I mean, like, are we really going to bank our lives on them? And I know I am, you know. And the thing that allows me to feel completely satisfied with this answer, the Buddha's answer on this, is that to this date, everything that I have understood of the teachings has turned out to be true. There hasn't been a single one where I said, oh man, was he off base with that. Hasn't been one. And I'm convinced that the ones that I don't understand yet are because I don't understand them yet. The effect of the teachings in my internal life have been so powerful that you develop a certainty about the truth of the teachings that comes to you in no other way. But once it happens, you have it. So at this point, I don't know, you know. And what do we call that in Buddhism? Beginner's mind. I don't need to know. And to the degree where I don't know and I guess about it, I put just one more layer between me and whatever is actually there. You know, one more obstacle to finding it out. Okay, so that's it for this evening. I'd like to thank all of you for being part of this saga and for coming here tonight. I don't know, I frequently think it's kind of a miracle, a mystery or a miracle that we can get a whole group of people together in this society who are interested in this, you know. In these really profound questions and exploring our states of mind and figuring out where we go wrong and feeling safe enough that we can all do that together. So I'd like to thank you for that. And may all of us and all of the other beings in the world who are suffering, and particularly at this time of year. I mean, this is upper class dharma here. You know, this is really something that we have this building, and that we have the good fortune and the time, and the we're at a place financially in our lives where we can come here and do this together. There's so many people in the world who want to and can't, and are in such dire circumstances they couldn't even think of doing this because they're at a survival level. So, I mean, we are so fortunate. So may all of us and all beings everywhere be free from suffering. So, thank you.
Thank you.